Picture this. You're going in for surgery, putting your trust in a whole team of medical professionals. You're thinking about the procedure, the recovery, all that. Then, years down the line, maybe it even hits you out of the blue that an injury you've been dealing with, it might, just might, be because of something someone did, someone you barely even knew. Maybe their name never even crossed your mind. Like, how do you even begin to untangle that and seek justice?
It's a tough situation to be in, and it really brings up a lot of interesting legal questions. Today, we're going to take a real deep dive into the complexities of amending legal complaints to include a defendant that wasn't known at the beginning. We're going to focus on Fuller v. Tucker, a California case that I think you'll find really fascinating.
So what's the core issue that Fuller v. Tucker helps clarify for us?
It boils down to this. In California, when can a plaintiff add a Doe defendant to their lawsuit after that initial filing deadline, the statute of limitations, has already passed? You can kind of think of the statute of limitations like an expiration date, you know, for filing a lawsuit. And this case really shows us how the legal system tries to balance things out. It's got to make sure cases are brought forward in a timely manner, but also got to recognize that sometimes it takes a while to get the full picture of who's responsible and how they were involved.
Totally. And for you listening out there, especially for the law students among us who are really digging into the nuts and bolts of legal procedures, Fuller v. Tucker is a great example of those very specific rules designed to hopefully prevent injustice when new information comes to light after that initial deadline.
For sure. Okay, so let's get into the specifics of Annie Fuller's case. She had surgery and unfortunately ended up with a nerve injury that caused paralysis. Now, Dr. James Tucker, he was the anesthesiologist for that surgery. But here's the thing. Even though Fuller's consent form mentioned there would be an anesthesiologist, it didn't name Dr. Tucker specifically.
So she knew an anesthesiologist would be involved, but not necessarily who it would be.
Right. And that's a key point here. Fuller is saying that she didn't know that Dr. Tucker's actions during that surgery were actually the cause of her injury until later on. And this is so important because it highlights her understanding of, like, not just who is in the room, but who might be legally responsible for the harm.
Okay, so she has the surgery, she suffers this injury, and then she eventually files a medical malpractice lawsuit. To be clear, that means she's alleging that a medical professional's negligence caused her harm, right? Mm-hmm. So what about Dr. Tucker? Was he named in that initial lawsuit?
Here's where things get interesting. When she first filed the lawsuit, Fuller did name Doe defendants. Those are those placeholder names we see all the time, John Doe or Jane Roe, that kind of thing. They're used when the plaintiff thinks there might be others responsible but doesn't know who they are yet. But she didn't specifically name Dr. Tucker in that first filing. And the real problem here is that she later tried to substitute Dr. Tucker in for one of those Doe defendants after the statute of limitations for her malpractice claim was already up.
Ah, so that window of time to file a lawsuit related to that surgery had already closed. It sounds like a big hurdle. So what did the trial court say? Why did they side with Dr. Tucker?
They sided with Dr. Tucker because they basically said that Fuller should have known about Dr. Tucker's role much earlier. The court pointed to things like maybe she could have looked at her medical records more closely or thought harder about what was said during the surgery itself. They said that she should have been able to figure out that Dr. Tucker was involved and might be connected to her injury within that time frame allowed by the statute of limitations.
So it's kind of like they put the responsibility on her to put the pieces together faster, even if that information wasn't directly given to her.
Exactly. So this is the challenge Fuller was up against. The trial court basically decided that even though she didn't know for sure at the time, she had enough info available that she should have connected the dots. But, and here's where it gets good, there's this key piece of California law that specifically deals with these types of cases. California Code of Civil Procedure, Section 474.
Okay, CCP, Section 474. Sounds like there's a specific law that speaks to how this whole situation should be handled. What does it say?
It's actually a big one. It lays out a way for plaintiffs to substitute a Doe defendant with a real named defendant, even if the statute of limitations is over. But there's a catch. It only works under certain very specific conditions. The main one being that the plaintiff has to have genuinely been ignorant of, get this, either the defendant's actual identity or the facts that show they're liable at the time the original complaint was filed.
Ignorant? That's kind of a strong word in a legal context. What does it really mean here?
You're right. And this is where it gets a little tricky. This isn't about just not knowing a name. It can also apply to cases where the plaintiff knows a person, but doesn't know the specific facts that tie them to the harm. Like, imagine you know about a certain brand of medicine, but you have no clue that a specific batch was messed up and actually caused your sickness. And here's another important point, which the appellate court in Fuller was very clear about. The burden of proof is on the defendant, on Dr. Tucker in this case, to prove that Fuller wasn't actually ignorant of his identity or his involvement when she filed that initial lawsuit.
That's interesting. So it really flips the responsibility. What did the appellate court think about the trial court's decision, considering this whole CCP Section 474?
Well, they overturned the trial court's decision. They basically said the trial court messed up by using the wrong legal standard. Instead of looking at Fuller's actual ignorance, which is what Section 474 specifically requires, the trial court had incorrectly used the should have known standard.
Right, and that should have known standard, that's more about when a legal claim becomes a thing and when that clock starts ticking on the statute of limitations, right? So like two completely different timelines for two different legal concepts.
Exactly. The appellate court really drove home the point that the rules for figuring out when a claim is actionable and when you have to file it are totally different from the rules about when you can sub in a DOE defendant under Section 474. They said the trial court mixed up these two separate legal concepts, like trying to play two different games with the same set of rules.
So the appellate court was basically saying the trial court was asking the wrong question.
You got it. It wasn't about whether Fuller should have discovered Dr. Tucker's role within the statute of limitations. Like, should she have figured it out sooner to file against him directly? No, the right question, according to Section 474, was whether at the time she actually did file her initial complaint with those DOE defendants, was she truly ignorant of Dr. Tucker's identity or the facts that directly connected his actions to her injury?
That seems like a pretty important difference. Can we dig a bit more into what ignorance really means when we're talking about Section 474?
Absolutely. As we talked about before, ignorance in this context goes beyond simply not knowing someone's name. It's also about not knowing the key facts that establish how a specific person is connected to the harm and could be held legally responsible. In Fuller's case, even though she knew an anesthesiologist was involved, the appellate court said there wasn't enough proof that she knew Dr. Tucker specifically was the anesthesiologist, or, more importantly, that she knew enough facts to tie his actions to her nerve injury at the time she first filed the lawsuit.
Okay, so even if his name was somewhere in her medical records, if those records didn't explicitly point to his specific actions as the cause of the injury, that wouldn't automatically mean she wasn't ignorant under Section 474.
Exactly. The appellate court looked at all the evidence and said that just having Dr. Tucker's name in those records, which could be super long and complicated, that wasn't enough to prove Fuller had the knowledge she needed about his role in her injury. There had to be a more clear and direct link, actual facts that she knew about, that pointed to him as the cause of her paralysis.
And like you said earlier, the burden of proof in these DOE amendment cases, it's on the defendant, in this case, Dr. Tucker, to prove that the plaintiff wasn't really in the dark. Why is that so important?
It's a really important procedural detail. Remember, the law allows for these DOE amendments to help out plaintiffs who might not have all the info right away. It's all about fairness. So legally speaking, it's on the defendant who's being added late to the case to prove that the plaintiff wasn't genuinely ignorant of their identity or their role when the lawsuit was first filed. And in Fuller, the appellate court basically said, Dr. Tucker didn't prove that.
This case has got to be important for lawyers, especially for people just starting out in law school, right?
Yeah, huge. For law students especially, Fuller v. Tucker is like a must-know case. It really highlights how important DOE amendments can be. They're there to make things fairer for plaintiffs who don't have all the puzzle pieces right at the start. It also shows that there's a big difference between the legal standards for these amendments and the standards for deciding when the statute of limitations starts ticking. It drives home the point that courts need to focus on what the plaintiff actually knew when they filed the lawsuit, not on what they should have known if they'd investigated more.
And it doesn't sound like the appellate court was very impressed with what the trial court concluded.
Not really. The appellate court was blunt. They said that the trial court's factual findings, specifically that Fuller should have known based on like casual conversations during surgery or just because medical records existed, were unsupported by the evidence. And they went even further, saying those findings were irrelevant because the trial court was using the wrong legal standard. They pointed out there just wasn't any solid proof showing that Fuller actually heard Dr. Tucker's name during surgery and connected it to her injury, or that she had clear medical records linking him to that injection she believed caused the paralysis before that statute of limitations ran out.
So to wrap it all up, what's the big takeaway from Fuller v. Tucker?
The big takeaway is this. Fuller v. Tucker is a major clarification that the key question for Doe amendments in California is whether the plaintiff was truly, genuinely ignorant of the defendant's identity or the specific facts that make them legally responsible at the exact moment they first filed that lawsuit. And this is totally separate from when the statute of limitations might have started based on when they knew about the injury or maybe should have known. This whole case really brings up a fundamental tension in the law: efficiency versus fairness. Statutes of limitations are all about efficiency, preventing cases from dragging on forever. But Doe amendments, especially in light of what Fuller clarified, are about fairness, making sure that people aren't punished just because they didn't have all the information up front. It forces us to think about how pushing for quick legal action could actually end up protecting people who might be responsible.
It really makes you think about that scenario we started with. The legal system needs to be efficient, but sometimes uncovering all the facts and figuring out who's legally responsible, that takes time.
It does. So how do we balance those two things? Fuller v. Tucker gives us a piece of that answer, highlighting the legal protections in place for plaintiffs who don't know all the players at the beginning, even if it's not their fault. It reminds us that procedural rules, when they're used right, can play a huge role in making sure our legal system is actually delivering justice.
Lots to think about. Thanks for walking us through it.